Hello, everybody. Hey, Cal Banyan back here. Cal Banyan's Hypnosis, Etc. Another one without Meredith. Hey, boy, we sure miss Meredith. But as I said before, she went on vacation to Hawaii and she got backed up on a lot of stuff she's got to do. So I said, that's okay. Chill. Take it easy. No problemo. I'll do a couple episodes on my own, and then we'll have her back next week. All right, this is, guess what? If you're watching this anywhere except calbanyan.com, go there now, because right down below this, we've got all the supporting text and links and information that you want to get to know what's going on. And by the way, you know, sometimes you'll see me looking down at my clipboard or down here at my monitor, and that's okay. Please forgive me. I usually do that looking down at what I'm going to do next while Meredith is talking. But now I've got to kind of do this. And I'm going to do a lot of reading this time because this is going to be kind of a technical podcast, because there's some information I want to get out there to you guys that I think is really going to help a lot. I think we need to do some standardization in the field of hypnosis. And the more we can get on the same track, or at least understand what people are saying when they say things. For example, my background is in psychology. That's my training. I had a bachelor's degree and a master's degree in psychology. I'm what they call ABD, which is all but dissertation for PhD in clinical psychology. And you know, even psychologists don't all mean the same thing when they say certain terms, or they don't all do the same things if they're doing therapy with someone. But there's different schools of thought. And when we say, okay, according to the behavioral school of thought, you know, such and such is going on, or the cognitive school of thought, or the analytic school of thought. And so what I want to do is kind of identify some terms. They're really, really important terms. And then get into answering some other questions that I get that are right along the same vein. So this could be a really important podcast training video, because I think this could really help everybody get on the same page. Okay, here's one of the most important questions that you could ever get. And that is, what is hypnosis? And I've visited different forums on the internet, and I talked to different people. You could almost go to 100 different people who call themselves hypnotherapists or hypnotists and get a different definition of hypnosis. And because I teach a certification course, an advanced certification course in hypnosis and hypnotherapy, I wanted to really come up with the very best definition that I could come up with for the profession. Now, what I've got here is really a three-part definition. This could probably be different than what you normally hear. So, what is hypnosis? A, hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility, such that the suggestions given are accepted as being true to the degree that it affects the beliefs, habits, perceptions, and behaviors of an individual in varying degrees according to the depth of hypnosis established. So, here's the most important thing. Hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility. It's not sleep, it's not relaxation, it's not merely trance. Trance can be used to induce hypnosis, but trance without suggestibility is merely focused attention. So I'm going to read through that real quick one more time. Hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility, such that the suggestions given are accepted as being true and affect the beliefs, habits, perceptions, and behaviors of an individual in varying degrees according to the depth of hypnosis established. Now, B. Deeper levels of hypnosis enable the hypnotized individual to experience greater hypnotic phenomena, such as light states being able to create eyelid catalepsy, arm catalepsy by suggestion, for example, and deeper states allowing the individual to experience amnesia, anesthesia, and even hallucinations. So hypnosis is not like a light switch. It's either on or off. It appears in varying degrees according to the depth of hypnosis. Lighter levels of hypnosis are required to get some hypnotic phenomenon, and deeper levels of hypnosis are required to get other kinds of hypnotic phenomenon. such as, let me read it again, deeper levels of hypnosis enable the hypnotized individual to experience greater hypnotic phenomenon, such as light states being able to create catalepsy by suggestion, and deeper states allowing the individual to experience amnesia, anesthesia, and hallucination. And I can add, by suggestion. Certainly, just having amnesia, anesthesia, or hallucinating doesn't mean you're in hypnosis. But if you are experiencing this phenomenon because you're in a heightened state of suggestibility, then that is hypnosis. And then the C part, that A, B, and C, generally there are three types of hypnosis: naturally occurring hypnosis, and secondly, heterohypnosis, and thirdly, self-hypnosis, and finally, waking suggestion, which is similar to placebo. Let me just read that again to you. Generally, there are several types of hypnosis. One, naturally occurring hypnosis. Two, heterohypnosis. Three, self-hypnosis. And four, waking suggestion, which is similar to placebo. Now, naturally occurring hypnosis. In some situations, we're more suggestible than other times. When we're around people who we respect or we perceive as being experts in a particular area, then we are more suggestible than normal. Another kind of naturally occurring situation that can cause us to be suggestible is a situation in which we know nothing about. A totally original situation can cause us to be more suggestible. Heterohypnosis refers to when you do hypnosis with someone else, when you do hypnosis with a hypnotist. And so the hypnotist or hypnotherapist is hypnotizing you. That's heterohypnosis. And three, self-hypnosis, which of course is where you learn to hypnotize yourself. And then waking suggestion, which is similar to placebo. And actually, number one and number four are very similar, but placebo is where there's a substance involved, typically like a tablet or a salve or something that you would use. And then the belief is that that substance is going to bring about something. And then because of suggestibility alone, not because of any value in the substance, that the change occurs. For example, the doctor could give a patient in a research study a pill that has nothing of medicinal value in it at all in the pill. But the person is complaining of a headache, and the person says, here, take this pill. There's a certain percentage of people who are suggestible in that situation, and it's a high percentage of people that would actually report afterwards a reduction or elimination of the headache. Okay, so there we go. That's my working definition of hypnosis. Now, in classes, I really kind of drill it into everybody's head. Hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility. And the rest of this definition that I've given you is really built on this idea of suggestibility. So, what is suggestibility? Now, suggestibility, thank you for asking, is A, the extent to which a person is able to accept suggestion, which varies according to one's state of mind. Okay, and so the state of mind can be brought about in many different ways. Sometimes you will relax someone into suggestibility. Sometimes if they are emotional, they can be suggestible. Another time is if you startle someone, it can cause them to be suggestible for a short period of time. And many instant inductions are based on that process. Surely the progressive relaxation induction and even the Elman-Banyan induction, which is a rapid induction, relies to some extent on relaxation of the body, which is then used as a model for relaxing the mind, which changes the mental state to create the beginning part of the suggestibility that we need that becomes hypnosis. So once again, what is suggestibility? I've got a 5-point answer here. A is the extent to which a person is able to accept suggestion, which varies according to one's state of mind. B, the greater the suggestibility that an individual is experiencing, the greater the effect that suggestions will offer, that suggestions offered will have upon the person's perceptions of reality. Let me read that again. The greater the suggestibility that an individual is experiencing, the greater the effect that suggestions offered will have upon that person's perceptions of reality. So in other words, the more suggestible they are, the more profound the suggestions will be. And here's some things that the more suggestible you are, the more readily the individual will accept suggestions, or you will accept suggestions. The more suggestible they are, is the tendency that the suggestions will last longer. And the more suggestible the person is, the more profound the suggestion is, it can still be accepted. So in other words, this is kind of like the difference between eye catalepsy, which requires only light hypnosis, and positive and negative hallucinations, which require a much more profound level, typically a somnambulistic state. Okay, C, in hypnosis, which is an altered state of consciousness, one can reach high levels of suggestibility. So this is almost like a circular definition. So when I'm describing or defining what suggestibility is, I say, by the way, in hypnosis, which is an altered state of consciousness, one can reach high levels of suggestibility. So what I'm saying here is that when you have suggestibility that is greater than normal suggestibility, you have hypnosis. Most people don't recognize that as human beings, we are suggestible all the time. We have regular level of suggestibility. Hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility. So we have to acknowledge that we are always suggestible to some degree. And so in my definition of what is suggestibility, it's important that I recognize that and then say that hypnosis is the heightened state of suggestibility. D, in this altered state, suggestions can profoundly affect perceptions, including causing amnesia, anesthesia, and both positive and negative hallucinations. So now we're really starting to see the overlap between hypnosis and suggestibility. Suggestibility is the ability to accept these suggestions to varying degree. But when we have hypnosis, it is a level of suggestibility that is not normal, or a heightened state of suggestibility. E, when one is in a heightened state of suggestibility, the individual is then said to be in hypnosis or the hypnotic state. Let me read through that whole thing in kind of one breath so you can get the whole feeling of what suggestibility is. So what is suggestibility? The extent to which a person is able to accept suggestions, which varies according to one's state of mind. The greater the suggestibility that the individual is experiencing, the greater the effect that suggestions offered will have upon the person's perceptions of reality. In hypnosis, which is an altered state of consciousness, one can reach high levels of suggestibility. In this altered state, suggestions can profoundly affect perceptions, including causing anesthesia, analgesia, amnesia, and both positive and negative hallucinations. When one is in a heightened state of suggestibility, the individual is said to be in hypnosis or the hypnotic state. So there's kind of the basis. I mean, if you didn't get that stuff in your training, now you got it. And at the bottom down here underneath this video, there's a place where you can put comments, and I'd really like to hear your comments. You don't have to agree with me. You know, we can always learn something new. If you've got something to add or challenge about that definition, please leave the comment down there below. Here's another question I get a lot. What does hypnosis feel like? This is such a huge mistake that new hypnotists make. They determine whether or not they were their client or subject or practice partner was hypnotized by doing this. After they immerse them, they go, "So, did you feel hypnotized? Or were you hypnotized?" And the truth is, the person who's being hypnotized is so unable in the vast majority of situations to evaluate whether or not someone is hypnotized, whether or not they're hypnotized. The person who is able to evaluate whether or not another person is hypnotized is the hypnotist, who can do something very special. He or she can give the subject or the client or the practice partner tests for different levels of hypnosis. So, what does hypnosis feel like? Well, let me ask you something and think about this for a moment. What does a heightened state of suggestibility feel like? If we're saying hypnosis is a heightened state of suggestibility, then what would hypnosis feel like? Well, give it a thought, and let me tell you something. A heightened state of suggestibility doesn't feel like anything. Just being suggestible doesn't have a feeling. Now, if you've been saying to the person, go deeper, relax, go deeper, relaxed, go deeper, relaxed, in whatever way you've done that, in the induction or deepening process, guess what? Then the person is probably going to feel relaxed because they're in a heightened state of suggestibility. You've been suggesting relaxation, and so it's very likely that they would experience a profound sense of relaxation. But that's not what hypnosis feels like. That's what hypnosis feels like if you've been suggesting relaxation. As a counterexample, one of the tests that we use for light state of hypnosis is arm catalepsy. And we'll have the person who's in at least a stage 2, which is light level of hypnosis according to the Harry-Aaron scale, have their arm out in front of them, and will suggest that that arm is becoming stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. Well, guess what? And if they're at least that level, they'll accept that suggestion. Their arm will feel stiff and rigid like a bar of steel. We'll tell them, you try to lower it, but you cannot. You try to lower it, but you cannot. And they'll be unable to. In this case, hypnosis doesn't feel like relaxation. It feels like what was suggested, and that stiffness, rigidity, cataleptic tightness, and inability to move a body part. So there you go. What does hypnosis feel like? It feels like whatever is being suggested. So how can we know if someone is in hypnosis? Well, the only way we can know is through testing. And so there's a series of tests that you should have learned that range all the way from the lightest level, hypnoidal, all the way down to the most profound level of somnambulism. And some of the best testing you can do isn't covered in many courses, and that is covert testing. And I've talked about covert testing many, many times in our series. I recommend you go and watch the 10 keys to doing direct suggestion right, and it's on over there on the left-hand side of the video underneath the shortcut to popular hypnosis training videos. I talked a lot about that in the last episode. What's the difference between guided imagery, meditation, and hypnosis? I get that all the time. Well, I do guided imagery, but it's really hypnosis. Or there's so much fluffy stuff going on. They say, meditation, isn't that really hypnosis? And I say, well, it depends. Now, when you think about meditation, meditation requires trance, which is focused attention, to be exclusively focused on one thing. For example, a mantra or your breathing. See, that kind of idea. Now, merely being focused doesn't necessarily mean you have hypnosis. Using focus is one way to create hypnosis, but if your intent, see, one of the main differences between meditation and hypnosis is in hypnosis, the one who's creating hypnosis, their primary intent is to create suggestibility. Where the person who's doing meditation, if you go to 100 meditators and you ask, what's your primary intent into going into the meditative state? And not one of them will say, I'm trying to create a state of heightened suggestibility. So that's the main difference between meditation and hypnosis, be it self-hypnosis or hetero-hypnosis. And that is, in hypnosis, we create a heightened state of suggestibility. In meditation, our goal is to create that focused attention so that we can achieve whatever else the meditator wants to achieve. It might be relaxation or enlightenment, whatever it is. And guided visualization is really the same thing. What's the difference between guided meditation and hypnosis? Well, if their intent is to create a heightened state of suggestibility, then there is no difference. But if their intent is anything else than create a heightened state of suggestibility, then it's not hypnosis. And, well, how do we know the difference? How do we know if someone who is experiencing a guided meditation or guided imagery, how do we know if they're in hypnosis? There's only one way to know, and that is to do hypnotic depth testing. All right, so let's see. We're getting towards the end of this. Let me see if I can run through the last couple things. Maybe I'll wrap up with this or not. Do those blinking hypnosis glasses work? We've all seen them. They look like sunglasses or something, and then behind it there's these blinking glass, these blinking lights, and then they got headphones on. Does that work? Well, I'm going to take that question as, do they reliably create hypnosis? And the truth is, I've never used those. I've never used them on myself. I've never used them on anyone else. And so I would just say I'd put them to the same test as any other kind of hypnotic technique. If someone claims that their hypnotic glasses, blinking glasses, work, I would simply ask them, how are you testing for depth of hypnosis? That's it. How are you? Are you doing eyelid catalepsy? Are you doing arm catalepsy? Are you doing amnesia? Are you doing analgesia, anesthesia? Are you doing positive, negative hallucinations? Are you doing any of these things? Because if you're not, then there's no way that you can really claim that that little apparatus, that little device, is causing someone to go into hypnosis. It's like sleep learning. People will put a speaker under their pillow and listen to stuff over and over. Remember, human beings are suggestible even when they're not in hypnosis. Now, they're not as suggestible, but they are suggestible. So if they say, well, we have the results to prove it, and say, well, you know, like you'll have testimonials saying, hey, these glasses helped me stop smoking or whatever. Well, if you did something over and over and over in a normal waking state of consciousness, you're going to get results too. So now I'm not saying they absolutely don't work. I'm just saying this is the test. You ask them, how are you testing to make sure each individual is going into hypnosis? If you're not doing any depth testing, then you really don't have the right. You don't have the right to say it. All right. Okay, I got enough time to squeeze one more in. What do you think of hypnotists who post sexy videos online where they cause orgasms in clients and subjects? How about other party tricks such as getting yourself drunk or high using hypnosis and using these things to promote classes? Wow. You know, I think that the people who do that kind of thing reflect badly on themselves as professionals. You know, I have nothing at all against stage hypnosis, for example, if it's done in a tasteful way. Stage hypnosis that's all funds, G-rated, that kind of thing probably does the hypnosis profession more good than bad. But when you start getting people who, all they talk about is, you know, watch me hypnotize someone, and then when I touch their finger, they have an orgasm. Or, I get someone drunk using hypnosis. This is all interesting phenomenon, and I think that it's valid as research to, like, in a university research level, to say, gosh, what part of the brain is being stimulated to cause this to happen? It also helps us to learn about the brain. But I really think it hurts the individual's credibility if they're really too focused on, getting people, drunk using hypnosis and using hypnosis to do sexual things, orgasms or domination and things like that. One of the challenges we have in our field is, and I noticed it as soon as I got into the profession, it's like a magnet for people who are a little bit fringe. I mean, fringe people. And if you've been in this profession any time at all, you're going to have people wanting services that are really on the fringe. And if you care, and I, you need to go case by case basis with that. But, you know, we get hypnosis. It brings out the crazies. All kinds of crazy people will want to come talk to you about hypnosis and want to do crazy things. And there's probably a legitimate use for hypnosis to create orgasms. If you are a sex therapist and someone is inhibited in having their orgasms, you know, maybe there's a way to use that. But overall, I think it doesn't help the profession, and I don't think it helps the individual who is promoting it. To expect to have academic credibility when they're posting those kind of videos on the web, you know, and we know who those people are. I think it hurts them. Hopefully it doesn't hurt the profession too much. All right, that's it. One last thing. Once again, I'm going to do it again for this episode. Would you like a certified hypnosis pro hat? Great little marketing tool. Would you like a copy of my Secret Language of Feelings, a rational approach to emotional mastery, really understand why people do what they do? You see, one of the interesting things is people don't do so much what they think they should do. They mostly do what they feel like doing. And that book will really help you to understand how that is. And it'll certainly help you to be a better hypnotherapist. And then also my book, Hypnosis, Hypnotherapy. It was really my breakthrough book that got me recognized in the profession. It's co-authored with Jerry Kine, who wrote the introduction or the foreword and chose the name of the book. And what you can do is, once again for this episode, you can go right down below. There's a little box where you can leave your comments. And I'm going to choose someone within 7 days after this podcast is released and pick the most useful comment about what we talked about today in this podcast for the people who come visit our website. Maybe you challenged my statements about hypnosis and hypnotherapy or how I answered a question, or maybe you can add to it. And so I'm going to look for the highest quality post. It doesn't have to be long. It could just needs to be high quality, and then you will win one of those prizes. You get to tell me which it is. And if you live in the United States of America, we'll ship it to you free. And if you live somewhere else, you're going to have to pay shipping because, you know, if you live in Nigeria or something, it can be outrageous. All right, that's it. Please visit my other websites. CalBanyan.com is this one. Hypnosis, etc. That's the program. HypnosisCenter.com, where all my training programs are. Go to, I forgot to mention this one last video. That's ourhypnospace.com. And that's where you can go and meet other professionals in the profession. You can blog, you can post videos and all that kind of stuff. And of course, hypnosis.org, where we organize the world of hypnosis for you. There's a free directory there where you can get your website and your practice listed. All right. This is Cal Banyan signing off. This recording is the property of Cal Banyan and Cal Banyan's Banyan Publishing Incorporated. All rights reserved, for private use only, may not be duplicated without written permission.